This is the story of a young man coming to Jesus and asking, what is the greatest commandment? The teacher of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked them, of all the commandments, which is the most important? The most important one, answered Jesus, is this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind, and with all of your strength. And the second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. May the Lord bless his words to our hearts and minds today. I want to talk this morning for just a few moments about passion in our life, passion in our faith. First, I want to get started with something a little humorous. I heard about this 92-year-old man. He wasn't feeling very well, and so he went to the doctor for a checkup. A few days later, the doctor saw him in the park, and he was with his beautiful young woman at his side, and he looked perky, and he seemed as happy as could be, and the doctor said, wow, you sure are feeling better, aren't you? And the man said, yes, I'm just following your orders. You said, get a hot mama and be cheerful. And the doctor said, I didn't tell you that. I said, you have a heart murmur. Be careful. Passion can make a difference in our life. And if you look at this story this morning of Jesus being challenged in a sense, it wasn't an unusual question. In fact, you see it a number of times in the gospel. It's in this scene. It's also really sort of the setting turned around when Jesus tells the parable of the Good Samaritan. Because the person said, well, then who is my neighbor? And often it sort of overshadows this, the greatest command. And this morning I'd like to just take a few moments and think about this, the greatest command, because Jesus was affirming that. And the first thing to say is that that answer is found actually in Deuteronomy chapter 6. So if you want to turn there, that's fine. You don't have to if you don't want to, but it's really what's called the Shema. So you go ahead and say the Shema. It's kind of weak, but you can do it. It's Hebrew, so don't feel like we're getting out there somewhere crazy. Just Shema. Go ahead, try that, all right? Which is really how it starts out. And to give you the setting, it was really this. Moses is giving the Ten Commandments to the people. He's reviewing them with them. And when we think of the Ten Commandments, we usually think of a list of do nots, a lot of list of prohibitions, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. But in fact, of course, it starts out with the first commandment, which is to love the Lord your God with all of your heart. And Moses does go through the list of don't do this and don't do that. But then he comes back to the most positive thing. Now, if you know anything about coaching, God knows Purdue could use a little of this sort of thing. But in any case, a good coach never gives any instruction in the negative. In other words, if you tell someone, don't fumble the ball or don't throw an interception, as in the case yesterday, the human mind works away where it takes out the negative and you end up throwing an interception or fumbling because you just fixate on that. The fact of the matter is you need to tell them to do what they can do, which they can control, which is to hold the ends of the ball, to finish the play, watch out for the cornerback out there on the field. And the same thing is true in some sense in archery. Now, archery, the word sin comes from archery, and it means simply to miss the mark. And Savannah and I, my daughter, had a chance to do some archery this summer, and it was a lot of fun. And there's some things that tell you not to do and not where to aim, but the most important thing is to know where to aim. Because if you don't aim at the bullseye, you're never going to hit the bullseye. And then we also had a chance, which was kind of a lot of fun in one sense, was my nephew's in the Navy SEALs, and he was in sniper school, and on the way back, we had a chance to go to sniper school with the SEALs for one day for family day, and to shoot the sniper rifles. And so they did give us a little list of prohibitions about what not to do, but then they gave us a lot of instruction about what to do, and specifically how to hit the mark and how to stay focused on that. And so when you think about, for a moment, what's the center, the bullseye that we're aiming at, Moses comes back to that like a good instructor, and he gives the words of the Shema. And so I want to just take a moment and go through what the bullseye is and not the list of do nots. And here's what it says. These are the commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live by keeping all his decrees and commands I give you, so that you may enjoy a long life. Hear, O Israel, and be careful to obey that it may go well with you and that you may increase greatly in land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord your God promised to your ancestors. And here's the prayer. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength. These commands that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses, on your gates. What an incredible thing for Moses to say, and one of the most in-depth promises. In fact, you can read more about the promise of blessing from that in chapter 11 of Deuteronomy. But just for a moment, so you know, I mean, the Shema just comes from the start in Hebrew, which is Shema Israel Adonai Elohim Adonai Echad, which is Hear, O Israel, Lord is our God, the Lord is one. And this today is still the first prayer that Jewish people learn. And it was at the time of Jesus and well before that, which is simply, Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. And then you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength. And so to pause on that for a moment is, first of all, that the Lord is our God, the Lord is one, is sort of reminiscent in some ways of Jesus' prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus prays that we may be one even as the Father is one. And it's also the motto or theme of the United Church of Christ symbol, which is helpful to remember. Sometimes we focus on what separates us instead of what unites us. And one of the things that unites us with, certainly with our Jewish friends, is this prayer. And sometimes we forget that. And then it's love the Lord your God. Now, there's lots of intellectual things you can learn, and I'm a person who loves intellectual challenges and riddles and philosophy and all sorts of things, but in the end it comes down, in many sense, to our heart, how committed we are to God and to be passionate about that. And you know, you can't love God by just a list of prohibitions, things that we shouldn't do and can't do. We need to find the center of that, and Moses is firm about saying that's what we need to pass on to our children and our children's children. And he goes on to say, love the Lord your God with all of your heart. Now, some people might think that's a bit of an ancient throwback, but we still use that today. In fact, if someone were to ask you to point to yourself, where would most of us point? We'd probably point to our heart. Because whether you're ancient or modern, a heart is our truest center, our most intimate part of our thoughts and our feelings and the center of all of our lives. And so it was then. So it's with our heart that we sort of strive towards the heart of God. And Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And so that's the center of our life. And then you shall love the Lord your God with all of your soul. When we think of soul, people look at that differently, but soul is really, in the Hebrew life, that which goes on forever. Of course, our heart goes on too in some sense, at least the spiritual heart, but the soul is that which goes on forever. And sometimes you refer to it as nefesh or ruach, whatever, but... And it's used a number of ways in the Bible. The first is when God broods upon the face of the deep in creation. So God's spirit is that which brings creation into being. And then when God creates Adam. Now, this is the picture where in Genesis, God is seen being a very intimate creation of Adam. Adam can be used as the name of a man, of all males or all humanity. But in any case, the point is that when God gives life to Adam, God breathes into Adam, and that brings in supernatural life. So it's God's breath or God's soul that's breathing to him. And then in Ezekiel's Valley of Dry Bones, you may recall the vision where Ezekiel looks out and through sort of a spirit of prophecy, he sees a valley of dry bones. And the Lord asked him what he sees. And the Lord asked him if they can come to life. And he said, there's no way, basically. It's impossible. But then the Spirit of God comes as a sort of a rustling mighty wind, and all of a sudden those bones begin to come together. And miraculously, it's God's breath again that brings these to life. So it's God's soul or spirit. And the final thing I want to bring to mind is when Jesus is resurrected and he comes back in John after the resurrection. And this time Thomas is with the disciples. He was not with them before. And Jesus walks into the room. He shows Thomas his nail-pierced hands and side and feet, and Thomas believes. And then following that, it says that Jesus breathed on disciples and said, receive ye the Holy Spirit. Peace be with you. Now that word breathe is used only one time in the New Testament. In fact, it's so special, it has a special name for it called hapax legomena, but only means it's just a fancy word used once. But it's a special word that really means emphasizing that Jesus breathed in them God's Holy Spirit and made a new creation, just like God breathed on the world and created the world. God breathed into humanity and created them, and God brought this vision of the church back together. And so we love God with all of our heart, all of our soul, and then all of our strength. Now, Jesus and most of Greek life there sort of made an accommodation there with Greek thought, which is that in Greek life they had body, mind, and spirit. They sort of begin to divide out the emotions and thought. In the Hebrew world, that wasn't a problem. There wasn't any sort of division of the self. The Hebrew of that time was very holistic, and so there wasn't a need for that. Jesus is probably accommodating when he says mind and strength so that there's no sort of trouble with that. The fact of the matter is that as Christians, our thought life and our emotional life is raised up to a level that isn't in most religions of the world. Be that as it may, we are to love God with all of our heart, our soul, our mind, and our strength. And strength in Hebrew just means very, very. In other words, everything that you have. And so the question to all of us is, what kind of a passion do we pass on to our children, to our friends, to our neighbors? Is a list of things that you're not supposed to do, or is it the passion that touches our hearts and lives in God? Jesus is bringing this to mind, and it ought to be something that we don't just gloss over, but we really land on and realize how powerful that is. Because when I think you put together purpose and passion, that's when you bring about promise. And you read the promise of Moses, that this will be something, if we put it in our conversation with our children, as we walk along the road, as we eat, as we enter and exit our home, then our lives will be changed and we'll be able to pass down the faith to generations to come. It reminds me of the original Olympics in Greece, when they ran the marathon, that it wasn't the first runner to cross the finish line that won the race. It was the first runner to cross the finish line with their course still wet. And I think today we need to think about that, that it isn't just the mechanics of running the race of the Christian faith. It's also our passion and our heart and our faith that we love the Lord our God with all of our heart, all of our soul, all of our mind, and all of our strength. I'd like to close with this thought. A story told of a rabbi in the second century. And the rabbi was walking home, as he normally did, from his work in the village to his home out far from the village. And as he walked, he was praying the Shema. The Lord your God is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your strength. He was so focused on praying that prayer as he walked along this pathway that he missed the turn to his home. He just kept walking and walking and praying that prayer until suddenly he came up on a Roman encampment with Roman soldiers. And at the edge of that encampment was a Roman sentry. And the Roman sentry looked at him and said, "Halt. Who are you and why are you here?" And the rabbi was stunned by that. He sort of gathered himself for a moment. He said, "Well, how much do they pay you a day?" And the Roman sentry was not amused by that statement. He was taken back, a little bit angry. So he looked at him and repeated it. And he said, "Who are you and why are you here?" Again, the rabbi said, "Sir, I mean no harm, but how much do they pay you to do this?" The Roman soldier, realizing it was really just an older rabbi, answered, 2 drachma a day. To which the rabbi replied, "I will pay you twice that a day if every day you will stand in front of the doorway to my home, and every time you see me coming or going, you will ask me those same 2 questions. Who are you and why are you here?" And I think for all of us, that's a good reminder. Who are we and why are we here? Because do we have the passion and fire that we should have that touches not only our lives, but is a torch that we can pass on to our children and our children's children in a powerful and meaningful way? Love the Lord, your God, with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind, and all of your strength. Gracious God, bless our hearts and minds today. Help us all to bring our flames together and together burn brightly for you, that we are a light in a darkened world. And may it be a light of love that shines and glows, gives you honor and praise, and shows others your love through your power and to your glory. Amen.